Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, what is going on with the Hunter Biden iCloud leak? Well, Jack Posobiec helps us unpack that. And also Sohrab Amari about Moderna's special cutouts and drag queens. Email us your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. And get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com/SAS, tpusa.com/SAS. Get engaged, get involved at our Student Action Summit. Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis will be there with Turning Point Action, and get engaged at tpusa.com/SAS. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. Welcome back, everybody. Email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, and take out your phone and subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. We have a new Ask Me Anything episode out. I think you'll really enjoy it. Christian nationalism, about vaccines, all sorts of good stuff. So check it out. Charlie Kirk Show podcast. As always, you can email us freedom@charliekirk.com. That's freedom@charliekirk.com. With us right now is Jack Posobiec from Turning Point USA's Human Events Daily. Jack Posobiec will be speaking at our Turning Point USA Student Action Summit. Not too late to get your tickets. That'll be happening in a week and a half. Our largest student action summit ever, despite travel costs. I mean, I looked at flights. It's like $1,400 round trip from San Francisco to Tampa or from Denver to Tampa. And so it's really become a push for our team. They've done an amazing job. Jack Posobiec is with us. Jack, welcome back to the program.
You know, Charlie, we were just looking at that ourselves, and I was thinking that, you know, it turns out that Orlando is only about an hour and a half drive from there. So we're looking at, obviously, we're on East Coast here on DC, so we might end up having to go, just because the costs are so crazy, because we want to bring the family, I want to bring the kids, we might end up flying into Orlando and then driving over to Tampa.
Yeah, it's no joke, almost $1,000 a person from certain markets if you get a nonstop flight. It's unbelievable.
Thanks, Joe Biden. Thanks.
Precisely. Joe Biden. So, Jack, the assassination of Abe is something that the media has just not really covered very much post the initial shock and awe. Who did it, and what are we missing in regards to this story?
Well, so there's this individual who did it by the name of Tetsuya Mitsumbura, and he seems, as far as we can tell, the Japanese police are saying that he confessed to them, apparently because his mother had joined one of these sort of like Christian offshoot cult organizations. There's a lot of these that operate throughout Japan and South Korea. She had been donating so much of her money to this thing that it turns out that they didn't have any money then to inherit or for him to inherit as her son. And so this guy went completely nuts, then starts building guns in his home. Now, keep in mind, this is something that people, I think, for the Charlie Kirk Show will want to know, that the private ownership of firearms in Japan is strictly regulated. You do not have them. This is not something that's heard of in Japan, that people just go out and get firearms. It's certainly not the United States. It's not even Europe in terms of that. And so the issue then becomes he builds these things in his home and then decides to go kill Abe because he believes that Abe has some connection to this group, and then goes, walks up right behind him with what appears to be, right, you know, sort of homemade sawed-off shotgun, and is able to use that to shoot him in the back.
Yeah, so what is the potential motivation for this? You said because his mom joined some Christian cult. That doesn't make any sense.
What they're saying is he says that his mother joined this cult organization, gave over all of her money to them, and that he believed for some reason that Abe was actually secretly in cahoots with the cult leader.
So is it possible the CCP was aware or behind this?
Well, to me, it looks like something that it seems more Japanese than in terms of just the roots of it. I wouldn't call out the fact. The question, though, is what's going on with the security situation there? How did this guy know what the schedule would be? How did he know what the route would be? Why was the security so poor right? Why, how is this guy who's not part of the security detail, Charlie, you've been in a million events that have had Secret Service. I've been in them. You know that you are not allowed in that bubble, right? Around the executive protectee, unless you are part of the detail or you've got one of the passes, one of the pins, et cetera, right? This guy was able to walk right behind the former prime minister of Japan, still one of the most revered political figures in Japan, without any ID whatsoever. And so obviously there's a lot of questions as to what exactly led to the failure there. And as far as the CCP goes, right, the CCP stands to gain tremendously from this. Why? Because Abe was one of the number one thorns in the side, one of the largest and most vocal anti-communists in the entire region of Asia Pacific. Look, when I served in the U.S. military, we would go to Japan time and time again. So I was 7th Fleet. That's based out of Japan. I've been in Yokosuka so many times there during the time while Abe was prime minister, by the way. And his big thing, Charlie, his big plank that he was pushing for Japan was to take Japan and their constitution away from having this pacifistic government and returning them to the status of a military power, building actual aircraft carriers, deck landing platforms, building helicopter carriers, right? He wanted to put Japan on a footing because he understood the rise of China and threat to Japan. And what's interesting now is that so just 2 days ago, right, 2 days after his death, Abe's party just won a 2/3 supermajority in the upper chamber of Japan's legislature. What does this mean? This means that his vision of Japan actually being able to go forward and return to a military power status in Asia could finally be seen through, even though, of course, he will not actually be there in person to see it.
Yeah, I mean, look, we have no evidence the CCP was behind this. I don't trust the CCP at all, and you don't either. So I just have my suspicions, especially with all of the drama and the energy happening in the Asian theater right now. What has the CCP's response been to this?
Well, so the CCP's response initially was cordial. It was gracious that, but you saw some, at least on the official angle, but then you saw some of the organizations there, some of the newspapers in China, like this one Global Times or in Chinese Huanzhou Shibao. So they're known as sort of their really vociferous party-linked paper. This is the one that your hardliners, this is the one that the hardcore communists are going to want to read. They came out there and said, at one point, Abe stood for improved relations between Japan and China. But since that time, he has destroyed that legacy and destroyed Japan-Chinese relations because of his interference in the Taiwan question. And of course, they call the Taiwan question the fact that he does recognize Taiwan, has even called for the United States, specifically Joe Biden, to drop its neutral status on the one China question and to firmly recognize and assert the fact the United States would come to defend Taiwan. Abe was one of the biggest proponents of a free Taiwan in all of Asia. And so that's something where in mainland China today and over this past weekend, you saw people at bars, you saw people at having celebrations, yes, celebrating the fact that Abe had been killed in the street.
Do you think China's going to make a move soon on Taiwan?
Oh, I don't know why they wouldn't. I mean, look at our Navy right now. Look at our Army, right? Our Army, we've got soldiers who say that they can't be loyal because of a Supreme Court decision that they don't like. We've got aircraft carriers where the planes are falling off, the Harrier jets. We've got other ships that are burning to a crisp at the pier in San Diego because the sailors on board don't know how to put out a fire on a ship anymore. This is something that sailors, by the way, have known for about 5,000 years. It's obviously been a problem on ships since the very first ship was put in water. We can't do that anymore. We can't handle any of these things. So if you're Taiwan right now, I was joking with somebody the other day. I said they might as well just start changing the flags, right? They might as well just start, you know, going for it right now. Either start changing the flags or start mining the Taiwan Strait right now, because the PLA, they're coming.
So you think it's imminent, a move from the CCP on Taiwan? I mean, how bloody would that be? Would Taiwan put up a fight?
Well, it depends on what they would choose, right? If, you know, for me, and I think for a lot of naval strategists, one of the main tactics you think they would use, because of course, Taiwan's not Ukraine, right? So they don't share a land border. What they share is a sea border. And so when you're dealing with an island, the easiest way to neutralize an island is simply to blockade it. So an air blockade, a sea blockade, and essentially park the entire People's Liberation Army, encircle the island, and then bar it so that nothing can get in and out, and then also prevent air from getting in and out. And then, of course, that becomes a test of who? Joe Biden. Because are you going to airlift supplies into Taiwan? Are you going to continue trade? Are you going to keep those sea lines open? Then also, oh, by the way, what's right next to Taiwan is the largest maritime shipping channel in the entire Pacific Ocean, right? That's the channel that gets you from the South China Sea up to Japan, up to Korea, et cetera, right? 80% of the world's trade travels through that maritime shipping channel. So what does the PLA Navy do at the next point? Mm-hmm. They start going into there and they say, any ship that goes through here, you have to register with us. You have to check with us first. And so they are going to make everyone essentially go for that power play. Charlie, they might be able to do this without even firing a shot.
Wow. Look, there's a must-see movie you got to check out at salemnow.com called Michelle Obama 2024, her real life story and her plan for power. Film director Joel Gilbert, I know Joel, great American, takes a deep dive into the life of Michelle Obama, from Chicago to Princeton to Martha's Vineyard. He says Michelle Obama will run for president in 2024 and base her candidacy on a life story that is more racially divisive and nearly as fictitious as that of her husband, Barack Hussein. Check out the stunning new movie on Salem Now, Michelle Obama 2024. Michelle is following the same formula as Barack to become president, a best-selling autobiography, the keynote convention speaker, and a voter registration organization. First, Barack and now Michelle want to transform America. Michelle Obama 2024, now playing at salemnow.com. This new movie has stunning, game-changing revelations about Michelle Obama's past. The film director says only the truth can stop her. Michelle Obama 2024, watch the movie on demand or buy the DVD on salemnow.com. What is going on with the Hunter Biden deal? I know we have to be careful when we talk about it because it's not necessarily corroborated, but it sure looks to be legit. Let me play a piece of tape here. So, Jack, you know, you and I might have debates and arguments with each other, other people. Hunter Biden here is seen arguing with a hooker about how much crack cocaine he has. Play cut 18.
.07 without the bag.
So how long is
that? 2.0.
Jack?
She's pinching, man. She's pinching when he's not looking. She's going in there. She's going in that bag. It's like 2.07. I bet you if you played the full clip out, it would have, there was 25. There was 2.5, 2.6. This is what happens. Okay, can't say that on air.
Don't say it. This is what
happens when you let certain people into your home that you can't trust. Put it that way.
So is what else is in this leak?
So the main thing that we are seeing in this leak, right? And the story of the leak, I think, is what a lot of people are focusing on, how this leak took place. Did it come out on this 4chan anonymous website, anonymous web postings, as opposed to where did the hack come from? So the hack itself was not right. This isn't a hack of his iCloud directly, right? What this was there was a part of his when you back up your iPhone, sometimes you'll save a copy of that on your laptop, right? You might save a copy of it on your iPad, or it might save your iPad on your laptop or in your cloud, right? Well, sometimes that saves on a local server. That's what happened here. It saved on his laptop. And this also comes from the laptop that was at that repair shop in Wilmington, Delaware from 2 years ago.
So this is not part of the laptop, or it is? I'm confused. I don't quite understand.
It is, but it was encrypted until now.
Oh, okay. Got it. So this is all new.
So when you were going into it, you would click, just like if I'm on Charlie Kirk's laptop and I'm trying to go into Charlie Kirk's iPhone backup, I've got to know Charlie Kirk's password. And maybe that's different than the one for the laptop.
So they guessed it, which is here. Sugar Mama Crackhead 24 or whatever it was, right?
I think it was actually Julia is 26. I have no idea what that means, but that's what people were saying it was. We were seeing out there. So there's pictures on here, some of which, and, you know, look, obviously it's very harrowing, but at the same time, you know, the only thing I can say is when I was in the intelligence community, I didn't specifically work on human trafficking and child trafficking investigations. I was an intel guy. I was CCP China. And so with some of these videos, I have to imagine that before you can determine whether or not someone's of age, whether or not they're 18, you'd have to identify them. And then in order to figure out what their age was, what time, you know, what date was the photo was taken or the image was taken. But some of these girls, right, they do not necessarily, they're in that gray zone, right? They're in that gray zone, that danger zone of, are they over 18? Certainly some of the searches may have also been in that zone as well.
Searching for child porn? Is that fair to say?
That's what it looks like. That's what it looks like.
That would be a federal crime. So, I mean, look, we have to be careful the way we talk about it. So just everyone understands that if we talk about this incorrectly, all of a sudden you could lose your YouTube feed because they say, oh, you're spreading hacked materials. Is that right, Jack?
Oh, they'll use any kind of nomenclature they can think of to strike you down. They'll say it's hacked material or it's distribution or that you're spreading wild accusations, or they'll just hit you for out of context, right? And out of context is great because you can basically who decides what the context is, right? So of course we do have to be very careful about this, but again, this is what we're seeing on this purported leak from Hunter Biden's iPhone backup that comes by a long series of chain of custody onto 4chan and then onto the rest of the internet. They're also spreading torrents of this, which for people to know, that's a peer-to-peer sharing. And so there's no one central file to, you could take it off someone's server. It's being shared across laptops, across desktops, right? People are sharing it to each other now and they're uploading it on their own. So that's what the torrent link is. Now, the biggest thing that I've said is, when I look at all of this, is how does this guy allowed in the White House when we see not just the security threats, but the fact that he's clearly dealing with what appear to be foreign women. Do you honestly think, Charlie, for a second that one of them would not be a foreign agent?
This would be the most obvious person to go after. Again, they go after Donald Trump Jr. and they go after these people so mercilessly, and there has not been a single mainstream report on any of this. It's so reprehensible. It's so disgusting. It's so wrong. Jack, thank you so much. Appreciate it as always.
Appreciate it, Charlie. See you in Tampa.
Hey, everybody. This Common Sense is brought to you by the folks at SecondVote.com. Amazing people who are fighting back against woke corporations. Subscribe now at SecondVote.com, promo code Charlie.
Good afternoon. I'm Rebecca Hatfield, president of Second Vote. We've had uniquely American common sense since 1776, but now we're in the age of common nonsense. Today's nonsense comes from the big corporations fighting the Supreme Court. They can't accept the conservatives have won 3 huge victories. So they're trying to overpower the court's legitimate decisions, and they're using your hard-earned dollars to fund it. On Life, the court finally overturned Roe versus Wade. So some companies are paying for employees to travel to states where they can get an abortion. It's the usual suspects like Target, Starbucks, and Dick's Sporting Goods, but also others like Macy's, Netflix, and Airbnb. On the Second Amendment, the court clarified that we have a constitutional right to carry a firearm. So 200 CEOs signed a letter demanding gun control. It's just common sense that you have the right to carry a firearm everywhere, but woke liberals don't want you to be able to protect yourself. On religious liberty, the court ruled that, of course, a high school football coach has the right to pray after games. So woke CEOs promised to further remove religion from our lives. HR policies will stop employees from celebrating their faith at work. And big tech will continue to censor and silence Christian voices. These crucial issues are why Second Vote does the research to expose big corporations by scoring hundreds of companies on traditional American values. And we want you to use Second Vote research to make better choices with your money. So please make sure to arm yourselves every day with the knowledge you need to shop smart and stop funding the left. I'm Rebecca Hatfield, president of Second Vote, reminding you that your first vote is at the ballot box, but your second vote is with your wallet.
Make sure you go to secondvote.com and subscribe now using promo code Charlie for just $40 for a whole year. That's secondvote.com, promo code Charlie. So Moderna used to be a rather obscure company in 2019. Because of the gene-altering technology they call the vaccine, they are now a $50 billion company. Their CEO earns over $18 million. But they want you, the U.S. taxpayer, to pay for their legal bills. With us to help unpack this, who wrote a very interesting story about Moderna, Sohrab Ahmari. Sohrab, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about this piece. Moderna wants you to pay its legal bills. Walk us through it.
Yeah, it's a piece that appeared in Compact Magazine, a relatively newish populist magazine that I've co-founded. And this was under my own byline. I mean, we published many other people, but I wrote this one because I personally was just really outraged by this story. Whatever you think about the efficacy of vaccines or vaccine mandates, this should not be happening. As you said, the company Moderna, none of us had heard of it. Only a very few people who lived in the Boston, Cambridge area where it's headquartered had heard of it. And justly so, because Moderna had never successfully brought a biopharmaceutical product or drug to the market up until the COVID pandemic happened. And then soon after the virus's genome was mapped by scientists and became publicly available, it put together a vaccine very, very quickly. In fact, it's one of its executives at the time boasted that it literally took like 1 hour over a weekend to get this thing done. So why was it so easy? Well, because a different pair of companies, one Canada-based and one Switzerland-based, charged in a lawsuit that they filed against Moderna earlier this year, that everyone knew this technology of mRNA, of delivering a specific kind of genetic code to a cell and teaching the cell to do various things, including fighting viruses. That had been known for 20 years. What was always difficult about it was how to get the mRNA past the membrane of a cell into a cell safely and while maintaining its integrity. That was technology that these two companies had perfected, they say, over decades. And for other product groups, Moderna actually licensed it from these two companies. But in this case, they didn't get a license. They just, you know, borrowed, let's say, they just borrowed the technology without paying these two companies. And so now they're suing for patent. The two companies are suing for patent infringement. The remarkable thing about this, of course, this kind of thing happens in the biopharmaceutical industry from time to time. What's remarkable is Moderna's response to the lawsuit. Moderna didn't say, well, no, they're wrong. We didn't infringe. Here's all the reasons why they're wrong. We didn't infringe. Rather, it pointed to a World War I era U.S. law that says if a product is used by the U.S. government or the U.S. population, under certain conditions, then if the maker of the product faces a patent infringement lawsuit, the U.S. government, meaning you and me and others as taxpayers, will pay for the patent infringement. But it says if the U.S., for the benefit of the U.S. government, in the case of the vaccine, there were so many other instances where the U.S. government wasn't even involved in the process of distributing, selling, et cetera, administering the vaccines. And if you interpret this statute as broadly as Moderna wants courts to do, then anything that if there's ever anything the U.S. government uses in a Veterans Administration hospital, the U.S. military uses, et cetera, anything that has the loosest connection of having a U.S. government contract, then that's the U.S. taxpayer ends up having to pay for alleged patent theft. So it's really kind of an outrageous case. And it just shows how, you know, we think of pharmaceutical industry as this one industry that where the U.S. is in many ways cutting edge and we can do these amazing things. But even there, a lot of the profit is based on the same kind of like gaming the system that we expect from, you know, other areas of the economy. Yeah.
Well, no, and it's so important. I mean, and they want the U.S. taxpayer to try to shield them from potential, you know, liability and to try to get that kind of, you know, to try to get that kind of taxpayer shield. I want to read from part of the article. The stunning rise of Moderna shows how corporations privatize the gain while socializing the pain. Can you talk about how that's actually how Washington, D.C. works, though? They want to have taxpayer immunity to maximize their profits, and it gets rid of something called the moral hazard. Now, you and I are not free market, you know, Puritans by any means, but if we were to at least have some semblance of a market, you need to be able to fail, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Well, I mean, the most obvious case of this, which many, even if you're not familiar with this Moderna case, which is very technical and patent oriented, everyone remembers the bailouts. I mean, the first bailout of a bank was in the late 90s, but on a much, much bigger scale, that happened in 2008, where banks that had created these monstrous derivatives and these financial instruments that no normal human being could say, this is a normal investment to take bundles of distressed assets and then securitize them, mortgage-backed securities and so forth. To do that, basically take these risks and along the way make, you know, the bankers making huge bonuses, et cetera. And then they've made themselves so systemically important that in order for the rest of us not to go down into a depression, the taxpayer has to bail them out. And I think this is a very fair point that, you know, I have to say, you know, a lot of people on the left will make, but now increasingly I hear people on the right make as well, which is, you know, I didn't get rescued out of my failing mortgage or my mortgage where I was behind on. I didn't get rescued on my bills when I faced trouble. You know, why should mega banks on Wall Street? And you're right, it creates moral hazard in the sense that when you know that if you get into trouble, if you make bad bets, Uncle Sam will come and save you, then you're going to take enormously kind of unwise bets and pass on, you know, socialize the pain, pass on the pain to everyone else.
Well, and
it's
kind of,
really unjust.
Well, we have the socializing the pain, and this is something, again, regardless of your opinion of vaccines, mine on the COVID vaccine is very well known, but it's these vaccine companies are really protected from liability, from potential damages. And so for a while, we have this thing called VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And so basically Moderna, they want to get in on the action. They want to get in on the kind of the protection that is offered by the government. And so can you talk, Sohrab, a little bit more philosophically or broadly about how the defenders of the current market system are actually defending something a lot more that is much more like a fascist or kind of corporate run model where they use euphemisms of free markets and free people, but when it ever comes down actually closing corporate loopholes or making big companies pay, they say, oh, no, you can't do that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, this is not the 19th century model of Victorian capitalism, right, where government really just regulated the money supply. And by the way, that had... You know, that's a different question. That had other disasters, which were problematic. And ultimately, you know, in the course of the 20th century, states did have to step in various ways with the, you know, whether it's the Theodore Roosevelt's reforms of antitrust or the New Deal, et cetera, to mitigate the harms associated with that. But this is quite something else. This is. I don't know if we have a model for what we're going through here, but I describe it as a kind of private coercion where, you know, the very well connected can use, political lobbying, litigation power, not things you, so these aren't people who are like really innovating, right? In the case of Moderna, at least allegedly it's stolen the mRNA delivery technology, allegedly, or in a lot of these other financial institutions, they're not really, it's not like they're, it's a new product we all really need. There's nothing natural or healthy about certain classes of financial products that are where they bet on third world debt, or they bet on a lawsuit, or they bet on the outcome of weather. This is all made possible by lobbying and litigation, by Wall Street's power on Capitol Hill. And so
just some numbers. Pharmaceutical companies and their lobbying groups gave roughly $1.6 million directly to lawmakers, and they spent $263 million to keep drug prices artificially high. And they gave Republicans and Democrats equal. It's a uniparty, is really what it has become. And this is something that is incredibly personal for a lot of people. So drug prices remain high. They put forward this vaccine, and they want all the profits and none of the downsides, so your taxes continue to subsidize this. And it shouldn't be a mystery as to why so many people right now have angst and unease about what's happening in Washington, D.C. and corporate influences there. And the Republican Party just kind of says, well, we have to lower corporate taxes. Okay, I want lower taxes. That's fine. But in your piece, you go through this. And you're right. It is kind of a wonky issue, but you do a good job of broadening it because it's highly technical, right? Where, who stole it from where and what the technology is and I don't quite even understand it, to be honest. But you said, look, there's still a more disturbing element. The pharmaceutical industry is held up as one of those jewels of the U.S. economy, led by genius merocrats, capable of delivering life-saving enhancing solutions in the process, generating enormous value. But Moderna affair also reveals the extent to which success in pharma is also a matter of clever and cronyist maneuvering.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned prices. You know, do you know how much effort hospitals and pharmaceuticals put into keeping their prices opaque by law, right? They're fighting every effort, including various efforts under the last administration to introduce price transparency. If you have price transparency, if you have just one in a particular health market, one person shopping, it has the same effect as forcing gas stations. If you have a bunch of gas stations, if one person shops, it puts a downward pressure on the price of gas, right? Because that is enough to create a kind of competitive pressure. But with hospitals, have you ever made sense of what a hospital bill says?
No.
It's completely arbitrary. And that's a political choice.
That's right.
We can have transparent hospital and drug pricing. It's just their lobbying power.
We could. Look, we know rates are inching up, and they're still historically low. But if you're tired of the high cost of renting, there's still time to buy a home. And I was just talking about this on our program. You got to buy. And by the way, you could always refinance. If you think rates are too high, you could always refinance. So go to andrewandtodd.com. They're the ones to contact right now to get you financing into your new home. They're not just mortgage brokers. They're lenders with Sierra Mortgage. They've been through multiple ups and downs and economic markets like you can imagine, just like the ones we're seeing today. So you just got to go to andrewandtodd.com. Whether you're considering owning versus renting or seeking a safer haven for your family in a new state, now's the time to get a pre-approved loan to give you the edge over other buyers. I know Andrew and Todd. They're great Americans. We hang out together. They love the Lord. They're great people. So just go to andrewandtodd.com. Do not wait. Get your pre-approved loan today while rates are still historically low. And by the way, again, some of you might say, oh, Charlie, I'm going to wait for the rates to go, you know, down and all this. Okay, well, then what if the property is worth twice as much in 3 years because there's so many dollar bills out there? AndrewandTodd.com. AndrewandTodd.com can guide you through all of this. And remember, you can always refinance. So go to AndrewandTodd.com. I got to give you credit. I remember watching your debate with the far left wing conservative, David French, whatever that guy is. He's totally lost his mind in recent years, by the way. He's become insufferable. And nice person. I actually met him once, but his ideas are terrible. And it was interesting because it was you versus him. And I thought I agreed with him at the beginning. Okay, there's all these drag queen story hours. Not a big deal. The fruits of liberty mean that anybody can do whatever you want. You're like, no. This impacts children. This is about virtue. It's about standards. Well, it looks like you've been pretty well vindicated here, Sohrab, because it's no longer happening at five or six different places. Sohrab, it seems as if drag queens were no longer in their isolated little bucket. Children are being brought to them. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should go to the gist of my argument in 2019. I wrote this famous, infamous, whichever you want to call it, depending on your perspective, essay in First Things magazine, headlined Against David Frenchism. And I identified with Frenchism with this illusion that you can have a neutral public square, right, where, you know, libraries host, you know, drag queens, but also Christian groups can use the same libraries for, you know, their uses. Now, the problem is, I argued then, that the cultural progressives, these really sexual revolutionaries, will not rest content with saying, just let us have the public library to do this. First of all, we shouldn't grant that because that's not what a library is meant for. And we have to have a sense of what, you know, a rediscovery of what, like you said, what virtue is about, what if society teaches about sexuality. And as you know, drag is a really kind of garish caricature of what femininity is about. Yes. So that's what's disturbing about it. But at any rate, the idea was that you could, like, we could share space, right? And that was David French's argument in response to me. He said, you know, famously, he told the New Yorker, where New Yorker profiled both of us, he said to the interviewer, you know, the fact that someone can get a room as a drag queen and bring have children perform for children, quote, that's one of the blessings of liberty. I think our founders would profoundly, radically disagree with the idea.
Yeah, just go look at just some of the let's just say, degeneracy laws and obscenity laws in the states at the American founding. I got to play. We got short on time. Let me play cut 23 and a quick reaction to that. Play cut 23. Parents applauding enthusiastically for a child participating in a drag show.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously we all agree, I hope, that that's wrong and repulsive. But the important thing to note is that it's not just staying in libraries and drag bars. There are now proposals. And in fact, New York City schools have set aside a budget for drag programs in schools. And that was my original argument, that what begins as like this subversive thing, okay, a few kind of liberal parents do this for their own kids, voluntary, it always becomes, yep, comes to the public square. It comes to dominate the public square.
With force. That's the thing.
And National Review people at the time said, oh, what are you talking about? Now National Review itself is like, hey, wait, what? It's in schools now?
Yeah, I mean, but that's the arc, and you predicted it, and I was on the other side. And then I was like, wow, that's amazing. And Matt Walsh, to his great credit, he says, okay, it goes from tolerance to acceptance to celebration to participation. It's a brilliant four-part move. The liberals always do it. So, Rob, thank you so much. Amazing commentary. Have you back on soon.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.